Hello and welcome to Starkey's KosherClasses.com monthly web conference. We're here in the Starkey offices in Baltimore. I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg and this is my colleague Rabbi Baruch Beyer.
Hello.
Welcome back, Rabbi Beyer.
Thank you.
And today we're going to be discussing on the show, of course, your questions, comments, any issues that you'd like to bring up. But in particular, some of our recent visits that we had to various factories, and also our upcoming insect checking or vegetable checking site that we have been working on. Our technical director today is Reb Zev Steen, who's also going to be the one discussing the bugs. So I guess the...
Takes care of all the electrical bugs and then the...
Right, the bugs in the...
Bugs in the vegetables.
Bugs in the computers and bugs in the vegetables.
Right.
Our site that you've joined us is dimdim.com. Room name is Kosher. The dial-in number is 218-895-1203. The passcode is 2020. And we're very happy that you all decided to join with us. And if you have any questions, please feel free to chat them. So let's get right down to it, Rabbi Beyer.
Yeah.
Me and you went yesterday to some facilities in the greater Maryland area.
Mm-hmm.
We have to keep it anonymous.
Okay.
And I went to we both went to our respective companies, the companies that we handle, but we went together
in the same car.
Right, we save on the carpooling for the.
Definitely.
We're green. Starkey is a green.
Oh, very green.
So, the place that I went to produces confectionery items, and the complicated part of it really is twofold. One is it's a dairy and pariv facility. Dairy and non-dairy, right. Right. So some things are labeled with our star D symbol, which is dairy, non-Chol Yisrael, and some things are labeled with the star K. So basically two issues, besides to make sure that everything in the plant is kosher,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that goes without saying, but we want to make sure that the distinction between the dairy and the parv is upheld. So that's in two parts. One is the equipment, that it should be cleaned out properly between the dairy and the parv, so that the parv remains parv, and we checked on that, and that was fine. And also, so their labeling. So some of their packages will have a star D symbol, some will have a star K symbol. What happens, Rabbi Beyer, if they, by mistake, send out a dairy item with a star K symbol? What happens then?
Is this a test?
This is a test.
Well, theoretically, if that would happen, they could have to undergo a recall.
Right.
And that would not be, that's not pretty.
No.
And it costs money.
Right.
So they wouldn't want that.
They don't want it, and we certainly don't want it. And that's why we spend time, a significant part of my efforts with this particular company is to make sure that I have to check every label. To make sure that the star K goes on the right one, the star D goes on the right one. They have to send me every label before they print it. And even so, you know that sometimes, look, people are human.
Right.
We're human too. We could make a mistake. And we try, okay, what happened? It happened once. And they could make a mistake. We try our best and we have it checked and double checked, but it is possible.
Right.
And in that case, then we have to see what the issues require. But yesterday, everything checked out. The dairy was on dairy symbol was on the dairy packages.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, if they would put the dairy symbol on a parv package, that would be no problem from our perspective, right?
Right. Other than confusing the consumers.
Okay, but it wouldn't be. Nobody would have. It wouldn't cause anybody to do something that they shouldn't have done because the dairy is more restrictive.
Right.
Right.
I mean, the company, I think maybe we should mention that the companies sometimes have an interest in themselves making sure that there's a separation between the dairy and the non-dairy.
Correct.
In order to avoid any sort of, lactose intolerance, people with allergies and things like that. So they'll make sure that their cleanouts are up to snuff, just to make sure, you know, to avoid those kind of issues.
Right. I once had a question from a question from a consumer. It's reminding me now. And her question was that she had a part of non-dairy, I don't know, maybe a nut or something. I don't remember exactly what the product was. But the label on it stated that it was made in a facility that processes dairy, made on equipment that processes mm-hmm. dairy and other types of allergens and things like that.
Right.
So she asked me, is it still Parv, even though the symbol is a Parv symbol?
Right.
And in general, how do you know if it's Parv? If it doesn't say dairy, that's the general consensus. If it just says Star K,
sounds good,
it should be Parv. If it just says OU, it's Parv, unless it has a dairy or a D symbol next to it.
Right.
But so this was marked as Parv, and she said, how can it be Parv when
it's made in a facility
on equipment that has dairy? So I said, well, I guess we have to rely on the agency that they are cleaning it up or mm-hmm. making it so that it's Parv. Either it requires maybe a koshering, a boil out, or just a cleaning, a wipe, whatever it is. We're relying on the agency to do that.
Right.
So, but she had a lot of trouble with it. She said, but you're not supposed to use the same utensils for dairy and Parv. I said, but okay, but sometimes you can, and you know, the agency is obviously taking that into account. I gave her an example. If you had a glass jar and you put some dairy chocolates into it for your guests at home on the coffee table, and then you clean it out, you wash it out, are you now not allowed to put in part of a nut? You wouldn't be allowed. That's not an issue in that particular situation.
Right.
It was all cold, and so she insisted that no, that you're not allowed to do that. And I suggested to her at the end of the call that she could speak to her rabbi. Maybe he would be able to discuss it further with her, because I was not able to satisfy her issues, because I felt that they were, you know, we were relying on the... I thought I had explained it well enough, but I guess not.
Can't please all the people.
No.
All the time.
No, right. Again, we welcome you to our webinar. If you have any questions, you want to chat them on the dim-dim, you can do that at any time, and we'll try to get, hopefully we'll get to your questions. We enjoy taking your comments and questions. And what else was happening over there? They also have at this place what we call private labels.
Mm-hmm.
Private labels are companies, well, you have many companies also that do private labels.
Yes, many private labels.
Right.
So we should explain what a private label is.
Yes. So go ahead.
Oh, sure. Okay, a private label is, like it says, usually a smaller company, but not necessarily, will contract with another company to produce product for them and package it with their name on the packaging, and not mention the parent or manufacturing company. And that way, like for example, the classic cases of private labeling in the food industry would be all the store brands.
Like Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's is the king of private
right.
labels.
Well, yeah, any store yeah. brands that you have out
right.
there are, in essence,
right.
private labels, right? Here in Maryland, right, the big store is
Giant.
Giant.
Right.
So Giant has a wide selection of store brands. And all of that stuff, Giant doesn't have its own factories, for the most part. And all of those are made by private label companies all over the world.
So Giant or Trader Joe's hasn't got one single factory where they make anything,
right.
any food product. They buy it
right. so
from someone else,
right.
and
then
someone else
right.
packages it with their label
right.
and under agreement with the agency.
Right. So they're distributors.
Food.
That's why you'll see on the side of a store brand, it'll say distributed by, you know, Giant Brand Foods or ShopRite or whatever it might be. So, you know, the issues that we have with private labels, generally what we try to ensure is that if the private label is getting our symbol, that we want to make sure that it's being made in a facility that we know about and that's under our certification.
We have a question here that doesn't have anything to do with the private labels, but Skip Reader is asking, what is kosher salt? And I think there's two answers to that question. One is that really, I guess kosher salt could be table salt with a kosher symbol on it, and that really does, even though it usually has a kosher symbol, what's the famous brand? Morton.
Morton.
Right? when it rains, it pours.
Right.
It has a kosher symbol, but it doesn't require a kosher symbol on it. It's salt is inherently kosher except for Passover. But usually what's actually labeled with the words kosher salt is the salt that's used for koshering chickens and meat, which you find very rarely around nowadays because most people are buying their chicken and meat already koshered, which means that you salt the chickens and meat and it brings out the blood of it and then you wash it off. And that is not usually done anymore by the homemakers. It's done, I would bet that 90% of women who prepare food, or even men who prepare food, don't know how to do that properly.
Right.
Yeah, they don't, because we don't do it anymore. And it actually saves us a step, but it also loses the tradition that we had for so many years.
My mother used to kosher her own chickens.
Mm-hmm. My mother too, right? That's the last generation. Would buy non-kosher meat and kosher it.
Kosher slaughtered, but not
kosher slaughtered. Right,
the blood removed.
Yes,
right.
Thank you for clarifying. Kosher slaughtered, but without the further processing. And actually, that salt also is just the same salt. It's the same chemical as the table salt. It's just a different consistency.
It's a little bigger. The crystals are a little bigger.
And that really doesn't require a certification either. But I imagine that anything that comes with the label kosher salt is probably going to be certified.
I think it's on the marketplace because a lot of recipes I think call for kosher salt particularly.
Right. It has a different, maybe brings out a different flavor
or something,
in the food and so on. Someone, attendee number 17 is saying kosher salt. Oh, exactly what you said, Rabbi White. It has a different taste and consistency. Some recipes call specifically
for kosher salt. Right.
And that's exactly what you just pointed out. So it must be true.
Must be.
So what was let's move on to your plan. Before we get to the, we have a question here about the sea salt. What about sea salt? Sea salt, as its name implies, also comes from, it comes from the sea.
It comes from the sea
as opposed to the other, which is mined usually. It doesn't require certification. What I can tell you is I do take care of a sea salt facility, and basically it's just the sea washes up the salt into a little farm where they collect it, a salt farm they call it, and they collect it, it's dried out, and they filter it, and then they package it. The concern for me was, are there going to be any sea creatures in this salt that wash up together with the salt from the sea? And we looked into that because we wouldn't want to certify it if it was such a problem in a particular facility. We made sure that it wasn't a problem, but I'm not saying it is an issue.
Right.
I think you could buy sea salt without a certification because I think it's not really a problem. But when we certify something, we have to double check and make sure that it's not going to be a problem. What's the other question?
A little flavored sea salt.
Flavored sea salt. What do you say about that? What is it flavored with?
I don't know, but their standard answer for flavors is that it usually needs a certification.
Yeah, so you need to know. You need to know what kind of, is it a natural flavor? Like some sea salts depend on where they come from. I think there's Hawaiian sea salt, there's pink, there's different colors that may have a different taste a little bit, but it would depend if they actually add a flavor to it. If they add a flavor to it, the company adds a flavor, then it would require a certification. Otherwise, if that's the natural flavor, then it wouldn't require certification. Okay, so let's move on to your. You had a company also you went to yesterday on the same trip, Rabbi Meyer.
That was also a confectionery type company, a bit smaller than the one that we visited for you. This is a little bit simpler company to take care of than Rabbi Goldberg was company, because this is a strictly dairy facility, so there is no issues as far as cleanouts with the equipment or whatever. So really, once we have set the company up to run as kosher, and we've assigned rabbis or mishkichim to inspect on a regular basis, it's really just a matter of keeping track of the ingredients for one thing, and also the production and the processes. The question we had that came up yesterday was that the company had purchased a used steam
right.
jacketed kettle from an unknown source. It was not known what that kettle had been used for before, and the question was.
But steam jacketed means that
there's a
double hole, sort of a double
right,
layer
double
on
wall.
The outside.
It's a double walled kettle.
Double wall that the water. How is the kettle heated?
The bottom half of it has water injected into
or steam.
It, or right, and it turns into steam, and that's what heats the food, which is inside the kettle. So such a thing is used hot, and in order to use it in this facility, we're going to need to kosherize it, to kosher it, and we were discussing among ourselves and the owners of the company what would need to be done in order to have that happen. Which just brings up the issue that, you know, it's not enough to check the ingredients in a company.
Mm-hmm.
You also have to be aware of the fact that the company may have added pieces of equipment that you have to keep on top of. If they bought something which was used, then obviously there might be issues of having to kosher it. So that's
right.
something that our mashgichim are trained to look for.
Right. I also have another company right now that's going through a koshering, and I flew out there to look at the process and to guide them through the setup of how to kosher.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the rules are a little bit foreign to them. You know, why
right.
we have to do it in a certain way, why we couldn't just reverse the flow of the water and do it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because there's Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, different ways that we have of koshering that don't work,
right.
perhaps, you know,
right.
it works in halacha, the Torah law, makes sense, and there's a reason for it, but it's sometimes a little bit difficult to give over.
For people to understand, because
right.
they look at their equipment and it's clean. They say, we got it clean, Rabbi, you know, what else could there possibly be, you know, be in here that needs to be taken out?
Right, but I did, we set that up, and we're going to have the local rabbi go in and do the actual
mm-hmm.
koshering. We have here a comment. My great-grandmother kept a kosher home. I remember a ladder in the kitchen that reached the top of the highest cabinet. What was that used for? The ladder in the kitchen...
I would imagine it was used to reach the top of the highest cabinet.
My buyer. But he's asking, what was it used for in a kosher kitchen?
Kosher kitchen.
Oh, so we have here, Yael is saying that probably
Pesach.
The Passover equipment, the stuff that would be for... used for Passover. That's a good,
or maybe the cookie jar.
Now Yael is one of our mashgichas, so she thinks, and you know, she right away figured out
on
that it
ball.
Would be. She's on the ball. She figured out it would be for Pesach, because what else would you keep at the very top that you need? A lot of things that you don't want people to get the rest of the
that's
year.
That's what I said, like cookie jar.
The cookie jar. Okay.
Yeah. That's what we do in our house.
Right. So I think that's a very reasonable answer. You know, at this point, I think we should move on to the other topic that we wanted to discuss, which is with Rav Zev Stein, which is our new and improved insect checking videos and site.
All the bugs
so
are
if you're,
out of it.
So if you're squeamish, yeah, we got to...
All the bugs are out of it.
Well, not yet.
Okay.
But if you're squeamish, you know, you should know that in advance. But really, we the Torah law requires us to check our vegetables and some fruits for insects because they're forbidden for us to eat. Many people go to the store, Jews and non-Jews alike, and they buy vegetables and they cook them and they eat them, and they have no clue that there are insects in those vegetables because they don't check them and they don't, you know, they don't see them. So they don't...
We've spoken about this before, right?
Right.
And there's more of a... That's more pervasive a problem than it has been in the past 10 years or so, ever since the outlawing of certain insecticides and pesticides. So there are more bugs in the produce than used to.
Right. Thank you for joining us, Zev.
Thank you.
And let me
want to know who's watching the computer now.
Who's watching all the system? Well, the system can work by itself. Let me bring up the computer the. Let's see if it works. No, it doesn't work. Okay. One second. So let me figure out why it doesn't. Why it does not bring it up. Let's see.
Maybe you should let me know.
Oh, yeah, I should let you do it. Let's see if we can bring it up. One second. Okay, there it is. There we go.
Okay.
I can do it too, Zach.
Very good, very good, very good.
Another Goldberg.
I'm going to have to watch out. You're taking my job.
Man of many talents.
Okay, so this is actually going to be, I know people listening by phone can't see this, but we'll try to describe as much as we could. Our previous insect checking list was just that, just a long list
right.
of pages and pages of guidelines. And this new one is more user-friendly.
And interactive. Isn't that the...
That's the code, the key word, interactive, maybe. Yeah. But we have some good pictures. For instance, let's say we go to bean sprouts here, which I'm bringing up the bean sprouts, and it tells us that bean sprouts does not require checking unless there's some reason to suspect infestation, such as improper or prolonged storage or movement, and so on. So you can look now each one is listed separately. Each vegetable and fruit is listed separately.
Click
so
on the picture.
Right. You click on the picture, so you get it right away. So that's it's easier to use. Now this site is not yet active, right, Zev?
No. Hopefully, sometime in the next 2 weeks.
In the near future.
Yes.
Okay.
At least that's my deadline.
Right. And
is that when the bill gets paid? Once the bill gets paid, they let us go after.
And so we also have some more videos. That tell us about that.
Well, we had a few videos linked in before, but there were video tutorials I had been working on. But now, when you go into each fruit or vegetable, it will show up right there if there are tutorials available. We've also made little video clips of the bugs available as well.
Because that's one of the major issues with checking, is that you can tell somebody, check this lettuce, but right. if they don't know what they're looking for, they'll never
right.
find it.
Right. People call me and they say, you know, what am I looking for? Is the bug black? And depending on the vegetable,
right.
sometimes the answer is no. It's the same color as the food that you're looking at, so it's a little harder to tell unless you actually can see a sample, an example of the insect.
Right. Now, for the people joining us, Dim, they can see some of these videos and actually play them by yourselves. They should be functional for you. Here you have showing you some of the sizes of these insects. They're really small, but yet they're still visible. And if they're small but visible, especially visible when they're moving, then they would be type of bugs that you'd have to remove. Now we had an interesting thing that came up in the office the other day. Somebody came in frantically with some sauce. I don't want to say what it was exactly, but with some sauce.
Well known. Widely used sauce.
Yeah, widely used sauce. And they found some little pieces in it which looked like something
little
like little worms.
Yeah.
Did you see them, everybody?
Yes, I saw them.
What did you think that they were?
Little worms.
Yeah, that definitely looked like it.
Okay, they looked like little worms. And Zev took out his high-powered...
I think I just had some of that sauce the night before.
His high-powered microscope and showed it to many here in the office to try to figure out what it was. I actually did not think it was a worm. It didn't have the characteristics that I was used to. And anyway, but there were lots of these little things in there, and they certainly didn't look like they belonged, that's for sure.
Yes.
So you called in the end the company.
I spoke to someone, I think, in quality assurance.
Right.
And he said that they've been getting a lot of calls about it recently.
Not from kosher.
Not necessarily from kosher, just right. people who noticed it.
They just added it?
No, what he said was that depending on the weather and the year, some of the vegetables in the sauce sprout. And the sprout breaks off. It's a long, thin sprout. And the sprout breaks off from the vegetable and gets cooked with it, and it floats around in there. So
right.
it's really just part of the vegetable.
It's just part of the vegetable. And that sort of confirmed what I had thought, but we couldn't really tell 100%. And
under the microscope, it did not look like a worm.
No.
We were trying to figure out what other options there were, and I didn't really think of sprout. But someone else here actually suggested that. Ooh. It might be sprout. He was very excited when he heard he was right.
Okay, good. Okay, then we have also insect pictures, which I'm bringing up on the computer now. You can see what the bugs look like just in the photograph and their sizes, and I'm scrolling down. Here's a grub in a dried fig. Oh my goodness. Okay. What's our rule with figs now that Tu B'Shvat is on the way?
Right around the corner.
Right around the corner. So,
put me on the spot.
I believe we'll look it up. Right. What we've said in the past is that if it comes with a certification, it doesn't require the check, but it's a good idea to check a couple out of the container.
Right.
You open them up and just to make sure.
I think especially
that they don't
the ones
have
that come from overseas.
Overseas, right. Also, the Buxer, the Carib bread, what is it called? Carib? St. John's bread. Is that what it's called? The Carib?
It's called Buxer. St. John's
right.
bread. Carib.
Which is a common food, even on the holiday of Tu B'Shvat coming up. And we say that you should break it open in a couple of places,
right.
Or some of them, break some of them open and look for some webbing,
right.
Or something that would have been made by a spider. I'm sorry to be so graphic, but that's the way that it is, and the people don't pay attention, you know, they end up eating some of these things.
I actually met someone once who was not Jewish, and he was very concerned about the insects. Somehow he found out that I was involved in working with these videos.
You're famous, then.
Yeah, well, I guess I think one of his employees mentioned it to him. And he wanted to know, you know, he was very upset that he didn't know that there were insects, and he didn't want anything to do with insects.
You know.
And he washed the stuff off anyway, but, you know, he was interested in learning more just from his standpoint. You know, he is, I guess, from a health standpoint, as far as he
concerned. The federal government has certain minimum standards that they allow as far as infestation in, mm-hmm. say, peanut butter, for example, whether it's bugs or rodent hairs,
mm-hmm.
or any number mm-hmm. of unappetizing things that
everything
the average consumer doesn't want to know about. But unfortunately,
right.
are present in the food supply that we all
mm-hmm.
Enjoy every day.
Right, mm-hmm. and we also have these produce checking tutorials, which actually take you through the steps of how to check for flour, how to check leafy greens, how to check strawberries,
mm.
and so as the comment here is that this is an amazing step forward, and I think it really is. Have you spent a lot of time on it, and
this is one great
really
step for what was it?
it's really it really makes it much easier to know what you are looking for. Now, when is this site going to be ready?
I'm hoping in the next 2 weeks.
In the next 2 weeks.
There's still a number of issues that have to be worked out.
And how will people know when it's ready?
Well, I'll send an email out to our different mailing lists that we have, Kosher Classes mailing list, our alerts mailing list.
Okay.
We're going to put it in the Kashrus Currents, our publication.
Oh, wait, also, you wrote down here for me, we do have a website that will take you straight to it. It's called checkforinsects.com.
Right.
That we purchased that?
We brought that. It's ours, and it takes you to the old check.
Oh, right now it takes you to the old one.
Was there a lot of competition for that name?
I'm not sure. No one put up a fight when I bought it. So.
Checkforinsects.com is going to be the site. It will take you directly to this to this new and improved vegetable checking site.
But we were going to check for bugs, but I was afraid that was had too much in common with computers.
I would have said something like, get the bugs out.
Yeah.
That would have been computer easy.
Okay, right? There are some here that we list as only needing washing. Those are the easy ones, like carrots, you can just wash them. Belgian endives.
What about scallions?
Button.
What's the deal with
scallions? Scallions we require to
slit them open
check
or something?
What we've said in the past, it may be changing, but we've said in the past is to take a couple of them out of, usually they come in a bunch, take a couple of them, cut off the bottom, and slit it down and check inside
right,
the greens, especially near the bottom, where you sometimes can find some insects.
Mm-hmm.
Scallions could have some bugs. In the meantime, we still have the old site up, and we're still, you know, using those guidelines. But this is coming up. Let's see what else we have. No checking needed. What don't you need to check? That's what I want to know. Okay, alfalfa sprouts.
Do not need to be checked?
Do not need to be checked. Beets.
So we say.
Beets, cucumbers,
they're grown in an
eggplant. These things do not need to be checked.
I think alfalfa sprouts are grown in
bean sprouts, they're not grown in
bean sprouts, the same thing.
Oh, they're not
bean sprouts. Bean sprouts, you know, if someone wants to check, there's a...
Okay.
Alfalfa sprouts, they don't need to be checked, and it's much harder to check them.
Okay.
If you wanted to.
Garlic, green beans, kohlrabi, parsnips, peas, peppers, potatoes, sweet potatoes, pumpkins, radishes, raisins, rutabagas, squash, tomatoes.
Oh, rutabagas don't have to check? Wow.
Turnips, zucchini. All these... All these things do not need to be checked.
Walk down the aisle. I went to the store and I just, you know, bought random vegetables to check to see, you know, what's involved in it.
Are there any other questions that we didn't deal with here by chat? We didn't get to any questions by telephone. We didn't have a chance to do that, but time is flying over here. Let me see if there's anything else that we didn't yet get to. If anybody has any other questions, they can chat it right now. There was a question here about why did some of our policies change? Yeah, well, we sat down and we reviewed everything many times and many hours of work on it. And we came up with some different thoughts about the vegetables. That's why you may see some changes in the new system.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think we will we'll close it out here, and we want to thank you for joining us for this approximately half an hour or so of discussion about kosher. Thank you, Rabbi Beyer,
welcome,
for joining us, discussing about the private labels and the other issues. And
thank you for including me. I get to go from tech support to talking head. I've moved up in life. But you know, next time it's moving back down, I have to go back behind my computer.
So we appreciate all the work that you do, Zev. And we want to thank everybody for joining us. Again, this program is held once a month on the last Wednesday of every month. The site is dimdim.com. The room name is Kosher. And by phone, 218-895-1203, passcode 2020. Again, I want to thank you. This will be archived. This was recorded. We were recorded. And it will be up on the site kosherclasses.org. And it should be up within a couple of days. And under podcasts over there, you can, if you want to review it or you want to tell your friends to watch it, it should be available there. We also have our last session, which was a review of the 2009 kosher year. We had the roundtable discussion. That's also up on kosherclasses.org, and also we put that one up on starkey.org as well under What's New. So you can find it there. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining, and have a great day.
Thank you.